ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. I'm from New Zealand, and my very special guest is from Australia. The wonderful, the indomitable, the various other nice adjectives, man, Santos Bonacci. Welcome back to the show. Haven't talked to you in ages, mate.
Thanks, Vinnie. Yep. Thank you. Great to be back.
Well, just let us know what you've been up to. And, of course, what was it? What was your website again? UniversalTruthSchool.com, was it?
Yep, UniversalTruthSchool.com. And my YouTube handle is Mr. Astrotheology. And also I have a school called School of the Holy Science.
Righto. Now, it's been some time since we've had you on the show. I'm just wondering what you've been up to, mate.
Well, I've been to South America, hence you see the... am I on video?
No. You just need to click your webcam button. I'll put you on the screen behind me.
Because I was going to show you the Centillo. You see, that's from Ecuador. But went there in May. Then I went to... Europe, did four countries there, 22 presentations, been back for 2 months, moved into this house. I'm at my niece's now. I've been here for about, since the start of November. And so I've been really moving a lot, you know. I also moved this time last year into the back of my brother's house. Mm-hmm. And then he sold his house. And so I've been pretty busy. So with two moves, South America, did a documentary there. The documentary is coming out. Johnny Guzman is in New York at the moment and he's talking to some graphics people and he's going to be coming back and putting out a trailer, a really, really nice trailer. But we did a lot of filming there for a month. I was just, you know, we were going from Guayaquil. We were going from Guayaquil to the place in the mountains, anyway, to do the presentations. I did about 8 presentations, 5 in Spanish, 3 in English, filmed. And we did a lot of interviewing and sort of filming on the road, like a road documentary is what they call it. And so there's a lot of footage. I mean, we filmed all the presentations in both Spanish and English, so they haven't even been released. But I have had some new stuff from the Europe tour that's been released. I've got the Belfast presentation, I've got the Amsterdam presentation, and I've got the Lucca Italian ones, just for the listeners that are interested, and also a couple that I did in England, Glastonbury Zodiac, the one I did in Glastonbury, and the Stonehenge gathering presentation that's up.
I think something's covering your...
So there's a lot of new material.
I think something's covering your webcam. It's gone all black. Like a rugby team.
Oh, right. That's interesting. Well, I'll have a look and see if it's not some dirt on the camera, maybe.
No, it ain't some dirt. It's like gone completely black. I think if you just turn it off and on again, it should work. But yeah, there you go.
Right.
All right, so beautiful. Sorry about that. Now, Max Egan also was just passing through to South America just recently, too. You didn't hook up with him by chance?
No, I didn't know he was going. I haven't spoken to him for about 6 months, probably.
Well, I also got this idea that a hell of a lot of people are going to South America. What is it that's so special about it?
Ayahuasca.
Oh, really? Yeah, in a word, I guess.
Yeah, you know, recover all your memories, heal all your wounds, get great insights into all other dimensions. Yeah, it might be worth a try.
Yeah, well, it's certainly worth the plane ticket, I take it.
Yeah, James Swagger and myself are looking at going in May, but I'm a bit unsure about travelling. You know, I absolutely detest travelling. I like staying here with my feet on the ground.
What's wrong with travelling? Is it the TSA, the groping kind of thing, or the what is?
Yeah, all that bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, standing in airport lines just to get your irises scanned and you know, a further zapping of your body and metal detectors, and I don't know how many full body scanners I had to opt out. Twice in Los Angeles on the way to Ecuador, I opted out. They were nice there. Not so nice in Amsterdam, where the... Well, I won't issue expletives, but the idiot there, woman, got right up to there, and I said, I'm going to opt out of the full body scanner. I'll just go through the metal detector. Oh, no, it's too late, she says. Yeah, really? Grabbed all my stuff. My pants were falling down because I took my belt off, no shoes, got all this luggage, and I went into the other line, and so opted out.
Oh, mate. I was just thinking about this as well. It's actually a real pain in the ass to travel nowadays with this BS terrorism. I mean, like, how many planes have been hijacked or blown up or anything like that since 9/11 that the government didn't do themselves? And so now the solution is obviously no. Don't arrest or discriminate against the government employees that actually pull off the terrorism. Discriminate against the normal people who are just travelling, trying to have a good time.
You might have a tooth bomb on you.
Yeah, a tooth bomb. Yeah, more like a tooth fairy. It's about as likely. In fact, I think more people die from the tooth fairy annually than die in terrorist attacks. I'm going to say that right now.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing about searching body cavities. I don't know when the last suicide bomber actually stuck one up his bum. I don't know that they do that. So. I don't think anyone needs to check up there.
Yeah, isn't that against their religion or something?
Yeah, you know. But they're going to grope you because they're a bunch of perverts and they work for a bunch of pedophiles. And I've always said that if you take out the pedophiles, we will have peace and security on this planet. Yeah. Because it's a clique of not the local pedophile guy, you know, that geeky guy that looks out his window and he's perving at little kids. Not that pedophile. These are killer pedophiles. You know, they actually rape them, murder them, eat them, have blood sacrifices with them, torture them. This is a real nasty clique. You know, not that I want to speak about negative things. I've got so many beautiful positive things to share. But these entities, you know, they need to be dealt with. And it appears that they're just not getting the memo. You know, things have changed. We are now in a new age. This is the Aquarian age, and there's been a changing of the guards. But the foot soldiers down at the bottom level of the pyramid, they still keep working for, you know, the ancient powers that were, and so. Yeah, they need to be addressed too.
Yeah, I do think so. And also, this is one thing that's kind of frustrated me. You know, you're talking about how we're coming into the new age. There's some people who interpret this quote new age philosophy as an excuse to never ever look at anything negative and pretend that it doesn't frickin' exist. I hate that, man.
Yeah, you know, you got problems everywhere with brainwashed people. You know. Because they're using New Age and all the rubbish that's in it to excuse themselves for being dunces, and they're using, you know, their paradigms to accuse the old ancient wisdom, which is what syncretism and what I'm sort of bringing to the fore here, that sure, the ancient wisdom was superior. It absolutely was superior, and that's proven in its wisdom. You know, if you can't see it, well, then you're a bit of a dunce. But you know, they had the wisdom, and they proved it. That their monuments are far better and more beautiful and glorious than ours. Just anywhere in Egypt. I mean, I took a stroll through Rome and realized that, you know, ancient the ancient people had you know. access to far better science than we do now. We're catching up now. You know, this consciousness they're refusing from the ancient past and the wisdom is because they're stuck in their little paradigms, you know, of fear and control, and don't seem to be able to progress out of this stage, the lower mind. Many of them reach a false salvation, which is what Plato spoke about, and they start intellectualizing, you know, all this left brain arguing and reasoning and logic and stuff like that. The philosophers didn't really spend much time on that, you know. They probably did when they were young kids, but they spoke about epignosis, da'at, knowledge, knowing. You know, they were philosophers, they weren't intellectuals. It's two different. So we've got these mind-controlled non-intellectuals, then we've got these intellectuals in the middle, and then we've got the philosopher king, the knower, the sovereign, and the mystic. And, you see this transition upward, ever upward. And so, but it's ever so important that the higher mind is reached, and that's what churches are absolutely against. You know, Christendom, which claims to be Christian, is not the religion of light, because Christ means light and consciousness. It's the opposite. It's the anti-Christ. It is the church against consciousness expansion.
Yeah. In fact, I saw
they are opposed.
I saw a South African priest once give a presentation to thousands of people at a big stadium kind of thing, and he had this slideshow and what have you. And he's talking about, what is the Antichrist? Who is the Antichrist? And he said, in the Bible, there's something like 17 references to the Antichrist, and the only thing on earth that currently fits all of those descriptions without missing one out is the Vatican. Wouldn't that be great if you were the Antichrist to come in and start off as the controller of the church that tells everybody what Christ is and what Christ teaches?
My goodness. See, the fact is, Vinny, the Antichrist is the Lord Anno Domini, and it's the calendar that is based on that Lord. They've given us a historical Lord. They claim that there was a Jesus who was born and he came to save man. He was God's son, and we date our calendar from his birth, you see. Well, it turns out the true Lord that these Anno Domini people, the Julian calendar types, Rome, turns out their Lord is actually the crown, and the crown is Kronos, and Kronos is Saturn. And Saturn is otherwise known in theology as Satan, the devil. And that's the Lord that when you go into court with your dated, catch the word dated, i.e. old, stale, Julian calendar date. So you rock up with your affidavit signed, and dated 5th of November 2013. 2013 is a copyrighted intellectual property by Rome. It's the JC calendar, Julius Caesar, but it's really Jesus Christ, Anno Domini, you know, the year of the Lord. The one that dominates your ass.
Yeah.
Good and hard. It's called democracy, but you need to put a little N in the middle of the word democracy.
Democracy.
And then you get demon crazy.
Yeah.
If you want to demonic, crazy world, just vote for demon crazy democracy, and you'll get it good and hard.
Yeah.
Mob rule.
Yeah, well, it occurred to me today, a friend of mine's gay, and we've got this politician called Colin Craig who's coming out talking about chemtrails and what have you, but he's very, very Christian and he's very anti-gay. And my friend's like, well, if anybody talks about this and supports this guy, I'm just going to block you and unfriend you. And I said, well, let us think about this. Who's more discriminated against in this day and age? Gay people, black people, or conspiracy theorists? Right? Think about this. How many conspiracy theorists are in Parliament? There's none, is there? You know? How many conspiracy theorists run major Fortune 500 companies or things like that? Like, none. Is there? You know? I just it occurred to me this morning. I'm part of the most discriminated group of people on Earth. This is awesome. I love being the underdog. We'll be right back after the break with my very special guest, Santos Vinace, UniversalTruthSchool.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, live from New Zealand 5 days a week. If you go to the homepage, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, you can listen into the show live on the little play button that we have there. And also on top of that, there are rebroadcasts available from various radio stations around New Zealand that are on the homepage there. As well, my very special guest today is the wonderful Santos Bonacci, UniversalTruthSchool.com is his website. We were talking about the old Antichrist and being a conspiracy theorist and how you do kind of get that sort of discrimination. Like, you think about it. How did they demonize blacks? How did they demonize gays? Called them names, subverted them, locked them up for no reason, so on and so forth. Hey, exact same things happening to conspiracy theorists today. And the same symptoms of resistance are starting to rise up. You know, people getting really angry, people getting into trouble and what have you, drug addiction and depression, suicides and what have you. It's really hard being a conspiracy theorist, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough, eh? That's why there's no conspiracy theorists in those places that you mentioned before, you know, in Parliament and everything like that, because they are the conspirators. So they're not going to be talking about their own, you know, works and, you know, and exposing them in the public in the light. Yeah, so that's for sure. It is. It's a tough one to walk, you know. It's hard to learn the truth, as Plato put it, and it's very, very dangerous to divulge at the same time. So, yeah. Very true. Mm.
I think it was something like Mark Twain said that it's a hell of a lot easier to convince somebody of a lie than it is to convince them that they've been lied to.
Yeah.
And somebody posted that, a wonderful quote from a former CIA director on my Facebook wall this morning. It said, "When the CIA's disinformation campaign is successful, you will know it because everybody in the United States will believe things that are untrue."
That's
from a CIA director. And it's like, whoa, that's a brilliant quote. Kind of illustrates the point that we're making, isn't it?
Yeah, very dangerous. It's very dangerous to subscribe and register to any of their services as a citizen. See, people demand citizen rights. I don't know why, because that's why they throw people in jail, you know, because that's what a citizen gets. That's the services you get being a citizen. That's the lowest of the lowest. So when you show your license, your excuse to be licentious and do permission to do something that would otherwise be unlawful to a police officer, he knows that you're already below him. So he knows that he can kick your ass. And he will, because, you know, he's now got a citizen with all their so-called rights. They're just privileges, benefits and services. Yeah. And one of the ways that we've been duped is to subscribe to their lord. When you go to court, their lord is not Jesus Christ that's in the book, the good book that they have in courts. It's the crown. That's the lord, and it's the dead date that we bring in with our dated documents. The moment you date a document, you're dead. And so you're trying to bring dead paper back to life and it has a dead date on it, they're going to convict you that you lose the moment you use their calendar, because the elite of the world do not use the Anno Domini calendar. They use only the Anno Mundi calendar. And AD and AM spell Adam, and that's the Adam matrix that they're running. You see, when you turn up in court with the 2013 date on it, you're already 3,760 years old, because we're living in the year 5,774 Anno Mundi, AM, not 2013 AD. So, you know, they've torn asunder Adam, and they've given us the fiction, the fictional part, the part that makes us dead seamen on the Holy See, and the Roman Curia runs the crown, the Curia and the crown, and that is the crown of none other than Kronos, because no one has a bigger crown. And in fact, you know, in the book The Two Babylons by Alexander Hislop, he mentions about Saturn on page...
And while you're looking for that, I wanted to... So you're talking about how police, they kind of assume this power over you. And the next time I get stopped by a cop and he asks me my name, and I say, my name is Slave, and you need to address me by my name. And he goes, okay, sir. No, it's not okay, sir. It's okay, Slave. All right? Do you understand me? Yeah. You just filmed the conversation with a cop calling you Slave. I thought that'd be freaking hilarious.
Yeah. Well, the fact is, we should be nameless, because name contains it's a negative word. It contains an M and an N. These two are water negative letters, and they are hieroglyphs, ideograms, which come from Egypt. They are actually the symbol of water, negativity. In fact, in Hebrew, the letter M is mem, and it means water. And the letter N is nun, or nun, N-U-N, and it means fish. So in Latin, to swim is nuotare, with an N. And that's why we get navies on the marine waters. So you see, M and N have been devoted to this business of negative water, whereas positive fire at the other end of the alphabet, because M and N turn up in the middle of the alphabet. That's why M is middle, the 13th letter of the alphabet, and N is the 14th. But the two first words, two first letters, A, B, Aleph, B, that's where we get our alphabet from. Now, for more information about this, I'd check the esoteric structure of the alphabet by Alvin Boyd Kuhn. And so you've got A, B, Abba, Father, and you've got this M, N, Water. See, Ab is fire, spirit, because the letter A is aria, air. Air is spiritus. So spirit merging with water, or fire merging with water, is the whole story of the alphabet, you see. And so a name contains two negatives, M and N. And in Latin, name is nomen, nomen, so no man. In Spanish, man is hombre, with an H. H-O-M-B-R-E, hombre. Just swap the H for an N, and you've got nombre, name. So you see, name and man are very, very linked, both in Spanish and in Latin. So when you are telling... when they are asking you for your name, they are asking you for an negation of your true source, of your I am, because we all are. You see, in the end, See, we've been differentiated through these corpses, these bodies, corporations, persons. But we are all from one source. And they know it. The elite know this, you see. But this division suits them. So then now we have a name which separates us from one and all. And we are labelled, you see. And it is in the negative, because both of those letters come from the word light, as everything does. Everything comes from light, but there are two lights. There's lux, which is luxury, divine light. And then there's lumen. Yeah, you heard it. Men. M-N. And see, when you see that word lumen, that is mundane light. And there again you see the M-N, mundane, because the world is worldly, it's negative. So it must have M and N in it, just like name does. It's very important you get this. This is very Kabbalistic, what I'm teaching you here. It's very esoteric, but you will understand, because it will help you to reclaim your sovereignty, because this is what they're doing in court with names, legal names, that is. So lumen gives us three consonants. This letter for worldly false light of Maya, of illusion, is called lumen, and it comes from lux. So you put lux at the top, and then under that you put lumen. And the three consonants are L-M-N, and they are in sequence in the alphabet. L-M-N-O-P-Q-R-S-T. And Q-R-S-T-U is Christ, Christo. But you've got L-M-N, and that is the word for lumen, the light. L-M-N-O-P-Q-R-S-T-U. Q-R-S-T-U is Christo, the hidden one, the one that's hiding in the alphabet. I'll get to the alphabet in a minute, but the rest of it. But this lumen gives us the word element, because elements come from photons, light, lumen. So you've got lux, lumen, element, and by the way, when you look at the word element and the word for sadness, to lament something, yes, because the light of the world is something to lament. But it does also illuminate. You know, the Illuminati? Again, L-M-N. And it comes from this worldly light. And the same word is carried through in the word name. So what is your name? What is your light? But it's worldly light. That's why when Moses asks God in the burning bush, he says, well, what's your name? So I can tell Pharaoh when I go down there. I need to tell him who, you know, who sent me. And he said, I am. Because what else can we be? We can never be labeled. You see? And so it's a false thing. It's just something for commerce, this name. Another thing about the word element is, check out the word lemniscate, because that also carries L-M-N in it. And lemniscate is the figure eight, the perennial figure eight. That's what the sun does in the skies. And analemma, it's... An analemma is very, very similar, but later on, just check out lemniscate, and it comes from light, and it comes from lumen.
Yeah.
And element.
But where does lemonade come from?
What's that?
Where does lemonade come from?
Lemonade. From lemons, fruit, products of photosynthesis, light.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, but what you have in the word lumen, hiding there, is actually what the Hindus call om. Lumen. And so, what we're getting is light and sound. Sound, Kabbalistically, is called speech. So when you have an expression such as abracadabra, that's Hebrew. It's pure Hebrew, and it means I create through speech. So we see that is the sound, the logos, the word made flesh. And the word made flesh is material. It's spirit in matter. It's all the material world is flesh. That's why to transition from the word word to world, you just add the letter L. So you see how the word made flesh is true because the word sound, cymatics, creates worlds. And so the reason I'm saying this is because they have, through their system and through the name and knowing about this false light, this lumen, they have created a name that we go and present. It's the false light. It's the false Christ. And what is more, we go to church on the ship of the Holy See, and they are the priests of Baal, and we have the, and we are claiming, because our documents are signed and dated with the Anno Domini calendar, so we're professing to have a Domini, someone dominating us, a Lord. And who would that be? Well, we're in the court of the crown, so we're in that God's court. So we're doing a deal with the devil. We've already signed, sinned by signing and registering with them. They have our birth certificate and DNA from the hospital run by the Knights of Malta.
Well, we'll talk about this more after the break. Santos Bonacci is my guest. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here in the first hour with Santos Bonacci, UniversalTruthSchool.com. We're looking at the phonetics and the origins of word, and I came up with a really lame joke. Don't take offense, Santos, it's just a joke. What do you call it when Santos Bonacci tells you a lie? A Fibonacci.
Love it. Love it. That's great. Hey, just that quote from Alexander Hislop, page 35 in the book The Two Babylons. Now, this is an oldie, and I'm using this one. I could use any other source to prove that Saturn is the crown, and the crown is Saturn, Kronos. But I want to use this one because this guy was a literalist Christian, Alexander Hislop. Published this book in 1916. When I was a good little Jehovah's Witness boy, I cut my teeth on this book. As you can see, it's well marked in 1982. Ha ha. Yeah. And I use this book a lot because Jehovah's Witnesses and Churchianity uses the book, so I use it to prove astrotheology. And on page 35, there's Kronos. There's the one that wears the crown. He's got a horn, the horned one. He's got a beautiful picture there. And he says, Kronos, Saturn, who according to Pericycles, was the first before all others that ever wore a crown. So when you turn up with your Anno Domini date on your affidavit, which would be the most stupid thing you could ever do, they will deal you as good as dead because you are dead. You're a dead man on a pirate ship. because that's exactly what it is. It's a pirate ship run by Satan, Satan the devil, the crown. You signed on, they forgot to tell you, because of course, you know, no consideration, etc., with their contract. In fact, that's why there's an X. You see, when the bank manager gets you to sign on the dotted line, there's already a signature on there, and that's the X. X marks the spot. And you've just been betrayed. You're going guarantor and underwriter of the bank manager. And so, you know, you've actually signed on. And so signing is sinning. And see, this is where they get us, because we've subscribed to their Anno Domini system. And it's as good as dead, because the true calendar is the Anno Mundi calendar. And so, you know, we're dealing with death. We're trying to bring a dead man alive when we're going into court, a corpse, a corporation. And we're doing this all under, you know, the guise of, well, it's justice, isn't it? That's the system of the crown. So the priests of Baal really are there just to milk the bonds, you see, that bond from the birth
certificate. Not entirely dissimilar from how the Fed milks the bailouts and buys government bonds.
Exactly. Right, for the stock market, the slave market.
Yeah.
Let's not get too, you know, too much into the theory of the conspiracy, shall we?
Let's not realize that people are actually just livestock.
Yeah, bonded on the stock market. I think those were the two key words of the Inquisition. Yeah, every time I read about the Inquisition, there were bonds and stocks and bonds. Mm. Yeah. Shame about the fact that the Rothschilds didn't tell everybody else that all of the stocks that are on the slave market are owned by them. And you cannot own any of their stocks. So good luck to all the yuppies out there. Go yuppie power. Oh, I've got three properties now.
Yeah. You don't have nothing, right? You have certificates of title as opposed to having title, which is different. Yeah.
You got
a piece of paper, which is the significance of money, right? You know, it's like a signature. But you have actual real gold or something, that's actual real value. And that's the difference between having a piece of paper that says you own the house and actually owning the land, like the Queen does.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, that's exactly what that little cross on the dotted line is. You see, it's no consideration. You see, so really, it's no contract, and so it's easy to get out of the contract with this this whole system, and that is just to reclaim the DNA and put it on the public record. Period. You're out of the system, and that's the slave system that I'm exposing. You know, through this slave system, what they do is they, Vinny, they milk the bonds. I've got a couple of friends of mine who are in jail here in Melbourne, the most livable city in the world, and the Lord Mayor of the city is the Chief Justice, Robert Doyle, and all he's doing is supporting pedophiles, the bar, who have got my friends Mickey Oliar and Kerry Marks in jail. And why? Oh, because they were doing a photosynthesis project called growing marijuana in your bedroom for your own recreation and for your own personal use. And so they're in jail because the government, govern your mind, is, you know, shoving it up people's backsides, exactly, with their fictional corporation, and jamming it up there good and hard, and milking those bonds. And a couple of my friends
is that technically, like, legally some kind of necrophilia?
It is. Yeah, that's what they're doing. So, you know, I'm accusing Robert Doyle publicly of crimes against humanity, people trafficking, supporting pedophiles. That's the Lord Mayor, the Chief Justice of Melbourne. I'm in Melbourne. Here I am. That's Peter Doyle. Peter Doyle, Chief Justice. What is he doing with Kerry Marks and Mickey Oliar in their jail system? Would that be because they had the Anno Domini date on their calendar? So, you know, is that why they're people trafficking them? Because they're dead? Let's bring this out to the public and see what the public thinks about that. To know that to live in the city of Melbourne, the most livable city in the world, according to all those, you know, manipulated UN surveys and all that bullshit. Robert Doyle, the Chief Justice of the city, is people trafficking because he's milking their bonds. That's why he lives in Toorak, and all of his pedophile politician buddies that live in Toorak, you know, raping little kids, because they're milking the bonds. Those little kids are their slaves. They get them as slaves from the hospitals, and the Knights of Malta conspire with them to hand over the DNA, and all of the people of the city of Melbourne, let alone the city of Melbourne, the whole world, come under this Roman system. The system, Rome, has our DNA, and it's using it to put us in jail and give us benefits and privileges and services. Wonderful.
Always got to do what you're told, eh? And that's something that's really starting to F me off. I just don't like being told what to do. You know, somebody could ask me to do anything, but if you tell me and tell me that I don't have a choice about it or anything like that, you must do this or you must do that, when I'm being compelled against my will, I really don't like it. And I think that's the difference between people like us, Santos, and the rest of the people in this world, is that we don't have submission to authority. Right? When a government passes a law that we don't want, we don't write a submission. We freaking go up against it and expose it for what it is.
Absolutely. The only way to kill this beast is to deflate it. It's running on nothing, on paper. In fact, they have stolen, they have made an original copy through the birth certificate and the registering thereof of the genuine artifact. We are the genuine artifact. Once you reclaim that lost property from the state that governs your mind, once you reclaim that, you then join the original copy with the genuine artifact. And you can say goodbye and kiss my ass to Babylon the Great, the system of Rome that has enslaved the whole world. We've all been enslaved through this citizenship of benefits, services and privileges, where you lose your rights and you get security by the mob. Demon, crazy democracy. And so, you know, it's time we said goodbye to slavery, lose the registrations, reclaim our DNA and get the hell off Maggie's farm. It's just a big plantation run by the Rothschilds and a whole bunch of other pedophiles, really.
There's a great Facebook page called Statism is Slavery. And here's how you know you're a slave. You would agree that 100% of your labour and the products of which going to somebody else who claims that they own you would mean you're a slave, right? What if it's 50% of your labour? What if it's 30? The fact of the matter is you don't have a choice at all, and that is what slavery is. Santos, thank you
slavery.
So much.
That's slavery. Yeah. Thanks, brother.
Right. You have yourself a wonderful day, and it's good that it's finally summer again in the southern hemisphere. We may not be freezing, but sometimes our webcams are. And we'll see you again. We'll see you again after the break, ladies and gentlemen. We've got Vince Seymour from New Zealand Watchdog on the Crown Court system. Incidentally, thanks, Santos. Have a good day, mate. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, it is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, broadcasting live from the incestuous Island Chains Nation in the legal ramification isle in the Southern Pacific Ocean, enslaved by legal means. You gotta love that, Shiite Muslim. And my very special guest is Vince Seema, an American who has more patriotism for New Zealand than most New Zealanders will ever come up with in their meager existence. Vince, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Vinny. Thank you. And by the way, I'm a New Zealand citizen and proud of it.
Yeah, so there you go. There you go. You remind me of Kim.com in that way, because he's really, really sticking it to the government and exposing a lot of their scumbaggery. And he wasn't born here. And I think that's actually, it's even better when somebody has patriotism for a country where they haven't been born, where they've been naturalized into, because it shows that they really have taken it on board and decide to love it. I don't know. That's my perspective either. I kind of considered myself almost like a forgotten son of the United States to a large degree. You know, there's a whole bunch of scum over there running the country, and I'm really upset about it, and I'm fighting for the people of the United States. And then at the end of the day, I'm 10,000 clicks away.
In the Vietnam sense of the word. You're an astute observer of the world situation.
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking of the world situation, speaking specifically about New Zealand, you're pretty much the preeminent watchdog on judicial corruption in New Zealand. Now, I haven't had you on the show for a while now. I'm just wondering, what's new on your dance card?
Oh, well, quite a bit, but it's hard to juggle it all at the moment because I've just come out of a 8-day trial against the police. This relates to the raid on my house in 2008. And that was quite enlightening. The detective superintendent, Andrew Lovelock, for Auckland, actually got caught lying on the stand, had to be stood down. And on the after we closed our case, he came up with this 3-month-old employee with the police college down in Wellington that tried to explain how he could, how the documents he had could get altered. They blamed it ultimately on a computer glitch, which is quite funny to see it unfolding. he should be charged criminally, but because it was a civil proceeding, I don't think that'll happen.
Well, I think somebody posted a interesting picture on my wall. It says, since 1968, 1,433 people have been killed by the New Zealand police. Not one of those police has ever been fired.
Yeah, it's a sad joke, really, and it's sad commentary. We just don't apparently care enough to hold these police accountable for what they do. And, of course, the courts have no stomach for it. They always side with the police, and that's unfortunate. It's a very incestuous club we have. It's hard to get through.
Yeah, yeah. So the way I figure it, there's the structure of how New Zealand remains enslaved. So up top, you've got whoever's really running the show, usually the bankers, they're the ones who provide all the money. And down below, there's their henchmen, the politicians who set all the unlawful policy against us. Down below them, there is the judiciary, which okays and signs off and ensures that nobody gets out of this just us system. And then just down below them, you have the police and various other bureaucrats who come at you and bring you into it. It's sort of like they drag you in kicking and screaming into this unlawful system, in some cases literally.
Well, I disagree with you only on the point that the politicians I find are grist for the mill.
The what?
We really are run by they really are fodder. They're dispensable. What I notice in my observations is that the bureaucracy, which includes the judicial, we really live under a judicial oligarchy, and that's controlled, as you said, by the banks and some very powerful families in New Zealand. And it's very hard to get justice in that environment. And of course, it's made worse by the fact that many of the court proceedings are secret. The courts tell us, and we tend to believe it. I don't, but the public at large, that this protects privacy and it's necessary to do justice correctly. But, of course, it's not the case. It just protects special interests.
It protects criminality, in other words.
It can do. In fact, it often protects criminality.
Mm-hmm. Do you see this this rule as I do, that if it comes from officialdom, whatever they're saying it is probably the direct opposite? So if they're saying we're doing it for your own good, it means they're doing it for their own good?
Well, I'm not that cynical, but I do recognize that that's often the case. I mean, look at this Transparency International New Zealand, or Transparency International, the CPI out this week, which is a perception index, which says that New Zealand is lowest corruption in the world as far as perception goes. Well, that's such a load of malarkey. And what I notice is that the government funds 92% of the local chapter's budget, and it's all comprised of feather-nesting bureaucrats and government contractors. It's incredible. In fact, I wrote an article that I posted last week on Kiwis First. It's called A Letter to Mugabe. And it tells Robert Mugabe how to get better image in the world of this country. And all he has to do to start with is fund the local chapter of Transparency International, as New Zealand does.
It's really funny you should say that, because I mentioned on the radio about this Transparency International Perception Index. First of all, it's called a Perception Index because if it was anything but perception, it could be called the Reality Index. But I said, New Zealand is so corrupt, we may as well be getting run by Robert Mugabe.
Well, he hasn't cottoned on to how it's done. He needs to take a lesson from the New Zealand government. It only costs the New Zealand government $500,000 a year, so it's a great propaganda value for what they get. And it's just incredible. I went to the AGM a couple weeks ago down in Wellington, and it was a hug fest of all these feather-nesting bureaucrats talking about how they're increasing each other's business based on the trade that's going to increase with New Zealand because of the perception that it has low corruption. In fact, they all marketed. They had Dame Sylvia Cartwright, who was speaking about being a judge in Cambodia. What was interesting, when she got through talking about how the prime minister of Cambodia gets all the contracts for his mates, one of the directors from Transparency International follows her up by talking about how the last time he was in the Ministry of Justice in Cambodia. And I realized that all these directors of the local chapter are going over to Cambodia, and not only going to visit, but going in. It turns out that Sylvia's mates are not getting the contracts like she had hoped. It's this corrupt prime minister. The irony wasn't lost on me and several others in the group that were in attendance. But it just shows how thick some of these people are, how perverted their minds are as far as what is corruption. We call it just watching out for your mate. But, of course, in according to Sylvia Cartwright, what the prime minister is doing is over there while he's protecting his mates is corrupt. So it's just according to New Zealand standards, which side of the fence you're looking from, not which side of the fence you're on.
So if you're in New Zealand and you're giving all the private contracts to your mates, it's not corrupt. But if you're in Cambodia and you're giving all the private contracts to your mate, it is corrupt, right?
Well, it is for Cambodians to do it. It's not for Sylvia Cartwright, who's a temporary judge over there, to do it for her mates. Of course, she can't do it because she's finding it harder to do that. It's just incredible. I'm astounded. Another telling aspect of the AGM was after Judith Collins was through speaking, she was congratulated by the former banking ombudsman, Liz Brown, who congratulated the government and actually said, isn't it interesting that our organization, which can be the bane of governments worldwide, has such a great working relationship with the New Zealand government? And it was so bald-faced that even Judith Collins, as thick as a skin as she has, was embarrassed. I mean, she could see it being, she wants the cooperation, and of course they fund this organization, so they're going to get it. But to sit there and be congratulated by this organization was a little bit too much, and she saw that.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I've got this this theory that once you get into high office, you sort of lose your empathy somewhat. You stop actually caring about people properly. And that's the only way you can survive, actually, in that environment, is if you don't actually give a frack about anybody. You know? Have you noticed that? You see,
oh, absolutely.
John Key and Judith Collins and Jerry Brownlee and all of these, even some of the leaders of the opposition, you see them being just blatantly callous, not caring about any criticism, not caring about who they hurt, how they destroy the country whatsoever. It's like their conscience was surgically removed at parliamentary induction so that they could do their job diligently.
You are absolutely correct, and it does disintegrate with time. What I notice, and what a lot of lawyers notice, and it's quite commonly expressed in private functions, is that when lawyers are appointed judges, if you're lucky enough to get them in the first couple of years, they generally give just verdicts. Over time, they all fall back to where they don't care. They no longer rule in accordance to law with law. They no longer try to be just. It's a whole mockery. And of course, they walk all these halls of the courts with judges. So they don't rise to the nobility of the appointment. They actually become corrupt, like the ones that they appoint next to, even if they're not that way when they're appointed.
Mm. Well, the analogy would be very similar to and I've said this many times before, a good apple and a bad barrel. And I think this happened to me personally in the working world, actually, because I didn't like what I was doing in the working world, like really, really hated it. I started to hate everything else at the same time because the reality was I actually just hated myself. And so in order to forget about the fact that I hated myself, I put it onto other people. That's what I couldn't keep doing. That's why I had to stop working for other people like that, is because I knew that I'd become one of them. And I think that might be the judge's problem too.
Well, I do observe that the corruption actually has a very detrimental effect on people generally. And people generally react like you do, or they just go into seclusion, or they become very angry. Ultimately, it's very difficult. When the public perception of the sheep in New Zealand is that it's not corrupt, when you see that, and you've grown up with believing that, and you see actually how corrupt it is, it's hard to reconcile that and your conscience. And I think you went through that same thing. I know I did.
Mm. Well, I think that whole reconciliation process is something that we've kind of got to... I think maybe part of this reason is that you feel powerless, right? And I think that's what really frustrates people. That's what really makes them angry. That's what really makes them depressed, is because they realize that they can't change things, right? People like us, on the other hand, we do things that are completely outside the box in terms of most people's general scope of thinking, yet we're actually being successful and gaining traction at the same time. That way, we don't continue to foster this sort of growing bitterness, and anger that from eating away at us, because we're actually doing something about this authority that we don't like.
Oh, I find that. I find that even though it's pretty much pissing in the wind, that you do have small victories, and it is a public education process. You can't expect victories in a corrupt system. All you can do is like what you're doing with the radio show and educating the public actually what's going on here. That's all we all can do. I mean, in little bits, we have no power, as you said, to actually change the system. And there's a lot of corruption is actually currency here. Actually, telling the government, issuing the propaganda and the public actually spreading it seems to have currency and spreading it around the world that we aren't corrupt, because that's the sense of pride, even though it's false. And like you said, quite correctly, the perception is very different from the reality. There seems to be a misplaced pride, but a pride nonetheless in this false image of what we have. And of course, you see it here with John Banks now, politician. It's much, much worse with the... When was the last time you saw a judge up on charges? In fact, it's never happened in New Zealand. They're protected quite
thoroughly.
Well. Yeah, thoroughly. Now, the case with Banks, of course, he was protected quite well, too, by the system. The system wouldn't do anything. It took a pensioner working on an $80 computer to prosecute this leader of a major political party in New Zealand.
Whoa. The fact that it's all it took is amazingly awesome.
Yeah. Well, but keep in mind that the police and the Crown for years refused to prosecute him. I mean, isn't that an embarrassment? Shouldn't we be hanging our heads in shame that this pensioner has to bring him to court? It's crazy. I mean, it's an upside-down system now. Now, of course, if you and I don't pay a traffic ticket, we could face prison if we refuse to pay the fines and the court costs. It's just there's two sets of laws here. Well, one set of laws, but how it's applied is the biggest criminals in New Zealand get a free pass on the system.
Yeah.
Can I
illustrate something here? Because I was just thinking about this yesterday. The legal system and the whole idea that we've got, instead of having the law of the jungle, like actually having a system whereby there's no vigilante justice or anything like that, would actually be really awesome. It would be great if it actually followed its own rules. But it doesn't. And that's why the system's so free.
Rules that they were... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Any rules would be preferable to what we have now if they were followed, as that's what's not being followed.
Yeah, and that's the source of my frustration, I think. This is like, I have to follow your rules, but you don't. You know, I remember a friend of my mother's, you know, got into his truck on Waiheke Island one time, sipping a bottle of scotch, and he says, "Don't drink and drive, kids." We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about sitting in Parliament. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with frickin' John Key. Actually, it's more like corrupt scumbags to the left, sociopaths to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with the Speaker of the House, who prevents anybody from actually criticising the government. All right, Vince Seymour's my very special guest from KiwisFirst.co.nz or KiwisFirst.com. And you've gotten some replies, haven't you? Some emails from Transparency International. We're going to come up with some kind of a joke name, you know, some sort of an ironic titlehood for Transparency International. I don't know. I'm a wordsmith. I'll come up with something soon enough. But anyway.
You talk about John Key. He actually told his caucus a few years ago that while corruption in the courts has been identified to him, he doesn't want his... MPs to mention it because, in his words, he didn't want to go there because if they do, people will lose faith in the judiciary. So here's a prime minister who's quite keen to cover it up in order to maintain that perception. He knows how bad it is.
Yeah, well, he knows how bad it is because he probably benefits from it, you know.
Oh, yeah, he's probably bad, isn't he?
I mean, have a look at the Russell Malcolm case, for example. Tried to expose massive corruption at a council, and then John Key
personally dictates his bail conditions that he can't even contact MPs or anything like that, and has his business shut down, gets him kicked out of his home, and all of that kind of stuff. You can't do that unless you've got a corrupt judiciary to enforce your will.
Oh, it's incredible. In fact, his case is very similar to mine, except the raid on my house was a little bit more over the top. Mm. I actually had 12 cops who came in at 7 a.m. and spent 6 hours tearing everything apart. It was entirely a fishing expedition. But when you talk to these cops, what they were, in fact, we cross-examined all of them in court a couple weeks ago. When you ask them what they were searching for, they said documents, anything. Some of them were pulling out context, computer context, with politicians, and we asked them, well, is that your understanding that the search warrant, you were looking for any contacts I had with politicians? And they said yes. Well, that showed how unlawful their warrant was, and in fact, they didn't do themselves any good with their testimony, but this is so common in New Zealand. In fact, this little police station up the road from me executes 100 search warrants a year. So a couple a week, and this is it's not a drug-infested dealing area. In fact, very, very low crime, relatively speaking, nationwide. When you consider that, in fact, I have an Official Information Act request in to the Ministry of Justice now for 2 months. They haven't answered me yet on how many search warrants are conducted a year. Malcolm Russell had the same experience that we had. Yeah, Malcolm Russell had the same experience we had.
It's actually the other way around. Russell.
I hope he does follow through with it.
Yeah, it's Russell Malcolm. Yeah.
It's very hard when people have two first names.
It is hard, isn't it?
Yeah. And in fact, we had I had this idea, and I want to run this by you. Okay. If we were to say, I don't know, get me elected as the Prime Minister, you know, just theoretically speaking. And I do my three acts of Parliament and then I leave. The first act is to change the office of the Prime Minister to the office of the Prime Sinister, so that everybody elected after me will have to be called Sinister. And then secondly would be I'll ram through under urgency with no democratic accountability whatsoever, the Suppression of Scumbaggery Act, which would create a government department to be staffed by volunteers from the community to investigate and prosecute corruption within the government and within corporations operating inside New Zealand. Okay, so the problem is the first thing you'd have to do is actually clean out the court system. Like, that would be target number one. So that way you can then use that clean system to prosecute other corrupt government officials, corrupt corporations that are operating within New Zealand. And the third act that I would do as the Prime Minister would be to pass the Suppression of Any Further Legislation Act, which would stop any more laws being passed to encroach upon people's freedoms, and there would be a clause in it that has an opt-out for laws that currently require your consent. So anything that's not falling under common law, i.e. hurting people, damaging their personal private property, or stealing it, you know, that kind of thing, anything outside of that is a consensual law and you can just opt out. You know, I think that would probably make a huge dent in the problems that we're facing in this country. But I'll never get elected Prime Minister, though, you know, because I'm just too freaking out there.
Yeah, well, too frank in your opinion. You got to hide your agenda. You got, you know, like the politicians do routinely, and the bureaucrats, many of them.
Here's an idea. How about I go out and I tell people that I'm going to do the direct opposite of what I'm planning to do. So I come up and say, vote for me, everybody. I'm going to sell the country's assets. I'm going to increase police power so that you don't have any rights. I'm going to sign trade deals which put the country under the control of foreign corporations. I'm going to cover up judicial corruption, uproot well-established New Zealand communities and sell them out to Chinese investors, allow oil drilling off of the coast, and I'm also going to sign us up to foreign military packs so that they can have control of all our armed forces and send our boys over to die for somebody else's behest. Vote for me. I guarantee you, it wouldn't lie a frickin' landslide, because it's worked so far, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. Your journalism is quite unique for New Zealand, just because there's really no investigative mainstream journalism, because there's an independent reporter, what's his name, Brian Bruce, who's done did that huge child poverty in New Zealand.
Sorry, you're breaking up there a little bit. Brian Bruce did what?
And that, of course, after he did that, John Key appointed his mate in charge of programming at TVNZ.
Hold on a second.
That was quite revealing of how...
You cut out a little bit there where you said Brian Bruce did something. What was it that he did?
Well, he's an independent TV producer. And what he did is he did this series on child poverty in New Zealand, which was quite damning of the government policies. I don't know if you heard about that, but after he did that, John Key appointed his mate in charge of programming at TVNZ to make sure he didn't get any further funding, which continues to this day. Oh, it's just, my friend Penny Bryce says, you just can't make this stuff up. Anybody who exposes anything that the government doesn't like, they just don't get funding. And that's just what it comes down to. Obviously, you're not getting government funding.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think with politicians and the plan for the country, it pays to do it, perceive it as a hurricane, to plan for the worst and hope for the best. And unfortunately, the best never comes.
Mm.
But you're very glad that you planned, at least.
We all remain hopeful. Yeah. Let me read this, what I got from Transparency International today. This is an email that came through to me. Now, I emailed the German parent a couple weeks ago, and the person responded that she would get back to me in a little time. Now, this is what she says today. Now, I was complaining about this managing director, whatever she is, of this primary director of Transparency International New Zealand, which is an incorporated society, so it's Inc., the name of it. And her name is Suzanne Snively, and she runs a company called More Media, which contracts to the government, not surprisingly. Well, she's also on her LinkedIn site, has herself listed as the chairman or chief executive of this company called Transparency International New Zealand Limited. Well, I looked it up. It's a non-existent company. As a consultant on a company to help trade with New Zealand, international trade with New Zealand, on the basis that New Zealand has low corruption and offers trading partners great opportunities. Now, so I complained about that to the international parent, and I had two things. I wanted to know what their policy is on government funding of local chapters and whether they considered it to be within their guidelines for someone who's involved with the organization, this non-government organization, nonprofit, to actually be trading on the name for personal gain. Now, this is a response. And I said that, and to boot, it's a fictitious company. So they she responded to me today. This is Catherine Decker, Frau Catherine Decker in Germany. Thank you very much for drawing our attention about the question of Transparency International New Zealand Limited. This indeed does not exist. So she accepts the company does not exist. And Mrs. Snively has updated her link page. She said, I hope this information is helpful and answers your questions. So, of course, it does answer the question that she's running a fictitious company. But it doesn't answer the question of whether that's okay for someone involved in this organization to be doing.
Yeah. See, so now this is another point that occurred to me just yesterday, Vince, is that, you know, you see a problem. You went onto LinkedIn and you saw this little problem here, and then you send a request away, and you try to look at it a little further, right? Mm. So many other people must have seen that and not asked the question. And this is something that I want every member of this audience to know. You are the one who can make a difference. So long as you see something, do something, all right? It's like Dianne Feinstein with the Big Sis, you know, see something, say something. Here's Big Vinny. See scumbaggery? Expose scumbaggery, all right? If you're not exposing the scumbaggery, it will take over your country and eventually your life as well, you know? It's quite a sad phenomenon because people just don't want to take personal responsibility. They think, oh, somebody else will do it. Nobody else is going to do it, okay? Nobody else has. Yeah. Nobody else will until you take personal responsibility for it.
Apathy is pervasive. But, you know, as you experienced with Auckland Council, I've seen it myself up here at Rodney, up until a couple of years ago, they virtually had a sign on the door what the bribing regime was. It was so corrupted. It was incredible. Everybody knew about it. But, of course, this local organization of Transparency International New Zealand won't expose it. In fact, I tried to find out what this organization was doing. So earlier this year, I looked online, and it's an incorporated society that's supposed to have the rules listed on the Incorporated Society's website. Well, it wasn't on there, so I called up Susan Snyder, and I said, why aren't your rules up on the, you know, it's a legal requirement, you're in breach of the law. And she responded, oh, it's because I've only been with the group for 9 months, and I guess the other people before me were incompetent. And I said, well, you haven't done anything in 9 months. And she I didn't know about it. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. So within a week, they had the rules up. Now, here's one of the rules. And keep in mind that if you go on the... It's going to be funny. When you look at their website... I've got to find it here on the article here.
I love that. And the time... I've only been here 9 months. You've had enough time to gestate a fetus, lady. You can certainly do a page with some rules, for frack's sake.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. So, now keep in mind that the Transparency International organization exists to fight corruption. In fact, their slogan was, and I think they've just now changed it, but corruption ruins lives. And they go on to say that people who fight corruption should not fight it alone. We exist to support those people and to expose corruption where it exists. Now that's their international slogan. Now, this is funny. The local chapter's rules say this, and honest to God, you can't make this stuff up. The rules state the overarching principles that the society must comply with are that the society will not be involved in investigating or exposing individual cases. Isn't that incredible?
So our job is to expose individual cases, but our rule says we're not allowed to.
Not allowed to, the overarching. In other words, the most important thing to this organization is to not expose it. How incredible can you... And people...
Oh, my God.
People wonder how the perception can be that we're allowed to start exposing it. They'd be too busy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because I was going to ask, you know, they're kind of like the Cancer Society. So how many cancer cures have you come up to? None.
How have you been fighting the big red?
Oh, ever. So how come you're the Cancer Society?
It's like these people as well. Same principle, same scumbaggery. We'll come right back up.
Me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment today with my very special guest, Vince Seymour. We're running through these, quite frankly, I'm going to have to put some of these in a comedy act or something like that, Vince, because these are just brilliant, brilliant. Okay, you've got more emails to read out, don't you?
I picked this up off the wall. I was at the AGM, as I mentioned, of this Transparency International New Zealand in November, where Judith Collins spoke and Sylvia Cartwright. And this came off the wall. This is the role of honor, the advisory group members to this organization. They're all government. I'll read through a couple of them. Gabriel Muckluff, Secretary to the Treasury. General Rhys Jones, Chief of Defense. Parlene Winter, Chief Executive of the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs, Naomi Ferguson, Commissioner for Inland Revenue, Martin Matthews, Secretary for Transport, Lynn Provost, Auditor General, Keith Munch, Chief Executive and Director of Maritime New Zealand, Ian Rennie, State Services Commissioner. It goes on and on and on. Andrew Bridgman, Secretary for Justice. It's all government. Alistair Morrison, Director General for the Department of Conservation. It's just incredible.
So if it's
this
land,
organization is just a government mouthpiece.
Yeah. And I think this is part of the Agenda 21 protocols as well, is to use private organizations more or less as a front for the government to push the government's agenda and have them working as one.
Yeah, but who can be more effective than New Zealand? Come on, we got to give ourselves a hand because we're really good at this. I mean, it's absolutely every facet of government. And this is supposedly a non-governmental organization, non-profit. Well, it's more government than any government organization. It's just it's a farce, and we should accept
I've never
it
seen
for being
that
a
many.
Farce.
Hmm.
Yeah, how do you get all those government officials in one room? This is their advisory members. It's unbelievable, and this is the question that the international parent will not answer. I asked them twice now. What is your policy on government funding and government control of your local chapter? Because they're supposed to exist to hold governments accountable and expose corruption. We have a local chapter that's controlled by the government and says in their rules that they don't expose corruption. So, come on, how does this work? And, of course, we have the lowest corruption in the world. Go figure. As I said before, Robert Mugabe needs to learn how we do it so he can improve the fortunes of the perception of his country.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, that was a point that I made, is it's not that New Zealand's not corrupt at all, it's that it's so corrupt that anybody who would ever expose any of the corruption is corrupt themselves already.
Yeah, when I tell people this, they find it incredible. In fact, they don't want to believe me. Of course, as I've just read to you, I'm reading you off the sheet of a list that came from their function.
Yeah, so, well, see, I'm different.
Making this up, and people's eyes look like them.
Yeah, see, I'm a tad different because I know that the corruption's going on already. It was really hard to accept in the first place, you know. I loved the idea of voting and loved the idea of obeying police and doing what was lawful and whatnot. And then I realized it was all BS. And then the cynicism sunk in, and I still haven't managed to get rid of it.
It's tough. I still have struggle with it. It took me a long time to accept it. And of course, it took me a long time, and I'm staring at the face of it. And I can understand the public's ignorance of how corrupt it is. And of course, we hear the messages every day about how low corruption is in New Zealand. And so we tend to believe what we're told, and we've grown up like that. So it's very hard to live in a society where what you're told by the government is very, very different from the reality. And, of course, we don't have the independent reporters other than you, it's just a small group, that are actually exposing it. And anybody who does it mainstream gets chopped off at the knees. And they learn the lesson very quick that if they're going to be working and earning money, that they have to play along with the government here. I mean, we're only a country with 4 million people. There's not a lot of place to go.
Well, I'm starting to get kind of
attacked by the government, as Brian Bruce has been done over this channel.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little bit angry recently, Vince, and there's this culture in Ireland where you can walk into a pub anywhere, doesn't matter whether you're rich, famous, politician, whatever. People will give you crap about it, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not this gobshite again. And I was just thinking, it's a very small town type of mentality, and we don't share that mentality per se in this country. So what if it was publicly and socially acceptable to accost politicians in the street while they're minding their own business at a cafe or something and call them a scumbag, or ask them why they're doing such and such, or why they're not uncovering corruption in the system and whatnot. I would love a day when that kind of thing is socially acceptable, because normally you get a whole bunch of their little cronies and stuff trying to hustle you away, or they just walk away from you. You know, they're afraid. They're like cockroaches scuttling under the couch.
Oh, terrible! I mean, in fact, we have the opposite situation here. If you go up and call somebody a name, you've just committed a criminal offense, according to some of these courts. Use the case of myself and Grace Hayden on totally different fronts. Grace was exposing corruption at Waitakere City Council. I was exposing corruption in the courts. We were both found guilty of defamation and damages, a huge sum, in my case $1 million, in her case I've been already. What she's saying and what I'm saying is 100% correct. We've got the evidence to prove it. But do we get a trial? I mean, forget about the fair trial. They can do a show trial, but they won't even let us in court. Both convicted without being allowed to defend ourselves. Now, what kind of system is that? This happens all the time. In fact, in the police trial, we were suing the police for a couple hundred thousand, and the Crown Council actually said, well, you can't sue New Zealand for a tort in law, which means a wrong in law committed by a public official, for that sum of money. The courts have always said in the case of torts, the awards are nominal or modest, in a $10,000 to $20,000 range. And, of course, the Crown Council had to say, but the exception is defamation, which can run $500,000 to $1 million. Now, how do you reconcile the two? I reconcile it this way. The reality in New Zealand is that you can't expose corruption and you get done for defamation. It's a way of silencing people. The huge awards of defamation, which are disproportionate in our society, are done to silence people. People don't come out and say anything. You said before, well, people don't want to be bothered, and a lot of that is true. The apathy runs deep here. But I find also that people are afraid to. They see the people who have been exposing corruption and get no support. In fact, they get attacked, have their houses taken from it, they're bankrupted, they lose everything. And that sends a message to the public at large that you don't expose powerful people in New Zealand because you get done. And, you know, in the case of Grace Hayden, she's exposed this politician, lawyer, who was running a private charitable trust, which didn't exist, and he was taking diversions on animal control fees into his private trust. So everything he was doing was illegal because he was working for the council as well. It's absolute corruption at the core. It's criminal act. She exposed that. She provides the evidence to the court. He files a defamation suit and then gets an order from the court that she's not allowed to defend herself. And he walks into court saying, oh, she's hurt my feelings by calling me a scumbag. And he wins the defamation case against her. So, yeah, when you say, well, wouldn't it be nice to be able to walk up to somebody at a table and call them a scumbag because they are, you can't do that in New Zealand. I mean, we are told we have freedom of expression, but heaven forbid if you should exercise it. Even if you're 100% correct, you get there's a heavy price in our society to pay. In fact, I say often the difference between New Zealand and bureaucrats and the mafia is that the bureaucrats haven't learned how to kill people yet, or maybe they have, and we just haven't heard about it. So there must be, they've learned that they're very effective at incapacitating them through other means, like financially stripping them of every financial, and in the case of me, four times in prison for short stints for things I've published.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what was occurring to me there, you know the Bob Marley song, I Shot the Sheriff? Sheriff John Brown always hated me for what? I don't know. Every time I plant a seed, he says, kill them before they grow. And I think this is what is happening to activists like yourself and Grace, is the Sheriff John Key is saying, kill them before they grow, before a movement comes around behind them, before they're not capable of being just taken out, you know? That's the thing. If you've got a big, massive movement behind you and public awareness, it becomes that more difficult to attack and destroy you, you know? I mean, take Julian Assange or any of these other whistleblowers and WikiLeaks and what have you. It's very, very difficult to keep doing things to them because the public always sees you doing it. And that's part of what I do, you know, is try and give a little public awareness to plights like yours and many others as well. Vince Seymour, KiwisFirst.com. Ladies and gentlemen, check out the website if you're interested in New Zealand judicial corruption, or if you're a lawyer and you want a job in the corrupt judiciary, you'll be good. You'll be good there too. All right. You've got to know the rules first, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime. Thanks for listening.